back to Women Making Moves, where we celebrate the moves that women are making. My name is Amy Pons, founder of Unlock the Magic Coaching and Healing. I'm joined today with Lori Lalonde. Lori is the founder of her executive, Ascent, a power accelerated for senior women who are determined to shape decisions, not just be part of them. She started her career in software development, moved into consulting, and went on to lead digital transformations across Microsoft's partner ecosystem. From there, she built and led high-performing teams and managed large-scale portfolios, driving innovation and transformation at scale. After nearly three decades in tech, including leadership roles at Microsoft and Manulife, Lori stepped out of corporate life to build the leadership experience she wished had existed earlier in her own career. Lori's mission is simple: to accelerate the rise of women leaders who are done waiting for permission. Fuck yes.
Yes.
Welcome, Lori.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I get jazzed reading that for so many reasons. One, it's the RBG quote that is like, women belong in any room that decisions are being made. Two, that it's for senior women. My mom personally had a complete mental breakdown after retiring, and that will likely be the rest of her story for the rest of her life. And then also just being the leader you wish you had. You know, I feel like we all heard that along the way somewhere as we were coming up the ranks. And I'm 20 years corporate executive as well in marketing, Pivoted to this beautiful life. And I'm thankful for that experience. But I was always, and I'm not sure how you feel about this, about generationally, I'm an elder millennial. And I feel that millennials were like the first generation to be like, no, thank you. No, thank you for this. And not to say that like X and boomers don't have that element too, but it feels like millennial women are more brazen. We're like, no. And Z is not having it like at all. So
yes,
anyway,
I
love Z. So I wanted to touch on those few things from your bio. And the reason I said, fuck yes, is because like, oh my gosh, no one needs permission. We have beautiful free will. That's our birthright as a human being. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm Gen X, but I feel like I have the energy of the millennial, and I had that throughout my career.
Yes,
I didn't care what role, what position somebody was in. At the end of the day, we're all human. And I raised a lot of trouble, and it was good trouble, at various companies I worked at. And I am very proud to say that there were times I was walked out of a company for daring to ask a CEO a question during a town hall when he opened the floor to questions. And it's like, this is ridiculous. Or even just daring to tell another CEO, I'm not going to work 70 hours a week endlessly for you. I am here for my 40-hour work week, and I have a family I have to go home to. So there were so many times in my career, especially being a woman in tech, that I was put in a position to choose between my family and my career. And that was non-negotiable for me. And I remember telling that one CEO who had taken issue with me asking him a question, that I have one family, because he made it clear I had to choose. And I said, I only have one family, but there are countless jobs out there. I can get a job anywhere. And the next day I was walked out with a package, which was fine.
Well, first, kudos to you. Congratulations. What's interesting is I feel as an energy coach, I understand that what we put out, we actually get back. We're actually creating our own reality. And the reason I bring that up is because on a few things, okay, we were like, you and me were disruptors in the corporate world. I was called into the C-suite more times than I can count because I made certain decisions. I was the head of the Women's Employee Resource Group as well. And it was when, oh my gosh, this is before Roe was overturned. It was when Texas made a state law, and we actually had employees in Texas. And so I was like, oh, this is valid and real, and I need to bring this up with my ERG. Ooh, a Fortune 200 does not like that. And so quickly word spread, and I got called in the C-suite, and I was always the one that asked for forgiveness. But I was like, well, okay. So I couldn't talk about reproductive rights. So I was like, well, let me try to get a local employee resource group down there in Texas together to see if any of our employees need rides out of the state for support. You know, that's the kind of stuff I got in trouble for, which I'm proud of. So let them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's women supporting women, and that's what we have to do. And especially in this era where we're seeing a scale back on support for women in the workplace and as well as other minority groups. It's heartbreaking. And so, yeah, I say a lot of my ideas are born out of rage, and this one, this venture that I'm on was born out of rage as a response
Oh,
to just
yeah.
seeing not just the rollback, but just seeing the lack of support the higher up you go in a company, and you're left on your own. And for women who struggle with navigating power dynamics and politics in the organization, it was very, very frustrating to watch that happen and then also be held accountable for showing up in a certain way when the training just isn't there for you. And so you have to just figure it out. It's that whole sink and swim mentality or sink or swim mentality, which I never subscribed to. I thought that was ridiculous.
I know why I brought up the energy coach and healer now. Sorry. I got sidetracked by my passion. I'm not sorry. I broke my
No,
own
never
rule.
be sorry for that.
I broke my own rule. I told Lori that sorry is a bad word on women making moves. So the more we focus on the things we don't want, that actually brings more of that back into our life. So not often I will say the workplace. The workplace is still rooted in white supremacy, patriarchy, colonialism, capitalism, power over each other, power over someone else. That's why we've allowed these kind of kings or queens to rise up in the rankings, and they literally think they're better than everybody else. They forgot that they actually work for the people rather than other way around. And I was that leader. I was the leader where I worked for my team. I ran through walls. I broke down everything for my team, and I was always given the feedback that I was too much, or I coddled them too much, or I baby them, or I'm mama bear. I'm like, great. And especially I led my team over COVID. I would drive out and check on them to their homes with consent. You know, just to say hi and see faces and like take off my mask for a minute and be like, hi, and bring them something, like bring them like a well-wish gift or something and see how their state was, you know, like how are you really? I'm proud of that. And if you call me mama bear, great. That gets to be okay. The reason I brought up the feeling that I know the workplace is still rooted in those systems. Well, they're operating exactly as they were designed. They were never meant to include women and people of color. Now, with the current climate, these corporate spaces or these workplaces, regardless of corporate or not, are actually, they have a pass to say, oh, we don't have to do this anymore. Cool. And it all fell like a house of cards because it was never strongly in the ground with anything but those outdated systems. And I say, like, okay, so with that, what do we want to create? Not those systems. And it's this space and time where you can be acutely aware that humans are suffering, and it's like a let them vibe. Let them bring down all of the systems that don't serve all of humanity, and then we can step in and create the new. That's what I mean by like giving energy into what you don't want versus what you do. So I don't spend a lot of time fixated on the fact that it's stuck in the past, but I did feel the need to share that. That's what those are the systems I feel like that's where the workplace is. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that is what we need more of, because nothing will change if we don't have the change makers pushing forward and creating what we need in this moment, which is very, very urgent, I think, right now.
But Lori, to your point though, the moment we do that, you and I both were, well, I said today's my last day because of my last straw moment. But I think what's hard is that for the change makers, they want to, but they immediately have that target on their back because workplaces are so unabashed about the newfound power they have.
Oh, absolutely. But it's about planting that seed, right? With the last workplace I was at, it was, the return to office became the norm now. You see one company declare it, put the stake in the sand, and they all follow. And it's disappointing. It's not showing modern leadership. It's not showing that forward thinking of the new way of work. And it's also back to the old policy of exclusion rather than inclusion. When you think about the reasons people need to work from home, it's not surface level. I mean, it has a lot to do with Everyone is at a different place in their life. They have different commitments and they have different abilities. And for some people, especially neurodiverse people, they need to be able to work in the way that works for them. And for people that need to work at home to have that focus, that quiet time without the noise of an open office, that's important. Or even just the ability to get to the office. So many people live in like rural areas. And now they're expected to uproot and move into maybe, the urban areas or the cities that are more expensive, but they're not getting paid more, expected to pay for travel, and expected to sit in an office for X number of hours where they're less productive than if they just had that focused time at home. And I didn't subscribe to that. And I pushed back on that quite heavily. And my private rebellion was just going into Workday and switching people one by one to remote status. Because as long as you were a remote in the system, they were honoring that for now. And for me, that was my rebellion. And so just showcasing time and again what leadership needs to be like and modeling that for my team and for my colleagues, they also at least witnessed what that felt like. And what it meant for them and how they felt supported. And even though I decided to step away to pursue this venture and say, you know what, I need to build this, they have now a boundary or an expectation of this is what I need coming into the workplace. This is how I need to be supported to be successful, to make the organization successful. Sure, that may not last very long. When push comes to shove, people are either going to quit, find work elsewhere, or they're going to burn out pretty quickly. And we're seeing a lot of that. But it's really about planting that seed initially and seeing where it takes root. For me, initially, I thought I'm going to be the leader that I wish I had. And that's the way I tried to show up for my teams at Microsoft and then at Manulife. And I feel like I did a great job of that because the teams that I had definitely thrived under my leadership. They had autonomy. They were respected. They were collaborative. It was such an amazing culture. And then when you move towards trying to reset and go back to that old corporate way of working, that just doesn't work for people. And for me, I'm like, I'm one person. If I decide, okay, I want to model this, that's great, but that's just one company, one team. And I see the barriers, the higher up women in leadership have to overcome in order to get to that next level. And for those women that have got to that next level, some of them had their values intact and others started operating in the same manner as the old boys club. And I don't agree with that.
And that's the, we are in this time and space where women specifically are being asked to reintroduce and be ironclad in this feminine energy of balancing both emotional safety and getting shit done, which is like a mix of the masculine and feminine. Well, imagine, and this is why. This happens at all generations, but, and in my experience, the older generations, the women of older generations, X and boomers, were the ones that were the most perpetuating of the old masculine, which was only caring about structure, power, money. And I also understand that that is what they felt they had to do to survive in their own upcoming. Great. But when I would mirror this back to them, they'd be like, we had it way worse than you. They were more defensive about it rather than being like, wow, I thought we had gotten past this. Tell me more. Let me help. Like, on your way out, you could be the change maker, men and women, humans. When you see behavior that you don't align with, or as a person in charge right now, if you're perpetuating the old systems, I don't know that you'll hear this, but for the ones that it doesn't feel good for, what doesn't feel good to you? And is there something happening that you wish you had? And could you introduce that on your way out? Be the change you want to see. Like, it just
Yeah.
makes me kind of crazy that so many people that are in charge right now, once they got that title, it's like they forgot.
Yeah.
Because I feel like everyone started out wanting that. And then I think it's survival. You get to that place. And you said something about how, yes, you and I are out here in the wild now. Well, it takes both, because there's of course going to be people that stay in the workplace. They know it's icky, or they know it's upside down, and they're going to be able to plant those seeds. And people like you and me are meant to come out in the wild and help from the other side. But it's going to take all of us, is my point. The women on the inside, the humans on the inside, the humans on the outside. And again, I feel that it's women pioneering the paradigm shift into this new energy where you can care and get results. It's actually, you get better results when you do care.
Absolutely. And I do want to go back to that point of when you were called a mama bear. I have had many, many managers in my career because I was constantly moving around to different companies for various reasons. But of all the managers that I've had, I only have a small handful that I look to them as my role models. And there was a manager of mine at Microsoft who's a man. Absolutely, has all the privilege, acknowledged his privilege, and led in a way that showed empathy and care for the team. And I remember that fondly, that time, and thought, this is the exact kind of leadership we need, not just from women, but from men. And I guarantee you, nobody called him a Papa Bear. And
No.
so, you know,
And
and
first of all,
so,
bless him. I love, I really adore the men that get it. The men that are like, oh, that just doesn't make sense as a human. They're just so matter of fact about it. And to your point, they don't get the judgment that women do when we express the same care.
Exactly. And I was told at one point, hey, you care too much about people.
Right.
And my response back was, that's what I'm here for.
That actually doesn't exist, by the way, that you care too much about
Yeah, you
people.
can't, there's no such thing as caring too much. But if I'm not allowed to lead in the way that aligns with my values, then my work here is done.
Yeah.
And throughout my career, I've never been afraid to make the moves that I needed to make to support myself in a way that was true to my value. And early on, I was in survival mode. I was a single mother of two, finishing college, going through my first divorce, trying to build a career with two babies. And even then, when I was put in a position to choose between work and my children, I chose my children. And I remember just my very first time storming out of an office saying, if you are going to put me in this position, I am done. And going home and thinking, well, I'm unemployed now. I'm going to go to the mall, maybe start looking around at some stores to apply to, because I was in an area that, tech jobs weren't fruitful. And I was just like, well, apply wherever, but I don't care. I'm not beholden to this career. I can work anywhere in the meantime, but I have to make money to pay my rent, to put food on the table. But I wasn't willing to compromise my values for anyone. And so I feel like we are in a terrible situation right now. The economy looks bleak. There's a lot of fear, and I understand that. But there's also more opportunity now than we had 30 years ago, because you have the opportunity to build what you want. It's easier and less friction to become a solopreneur for one. Sure, the road is long. Sure, it takes a while to build up the revenue stream. But when you look at what you have to sacrifice in order to compromise your health and well-being, it's just not worth it. I looked around. I remember my exit interview for one company when I was leaving. I had told the HR business partner, people are sick. They're sick because they're overworked. They are burnt out. And nothing's changing. And something needs to change in order to take care of them, because if they're burnt out, they're no good to this company. And that's the way you have to position it for people in those positions, is to say, hey, you care about company growth. Well, how can you grow a company when your people are not fully functional because they're so burnt out, because so much is put on them, the stress? And she just looked at me and she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. She acted very surprised, and I was disappointed. Very disappointed. Because I'm
I
like,
would
you should know.
well, I would also say feigned ignorance because I actually
Yeah.
found a lot of I was fortunate that I was very close with a lot of people upon my exit in HR. And exit interviews are a formality. They don't really pay attention to them. They're like, fine, okay. They know. They absolutely know. And because the job market is so in the employer's advantage right now, they know they're just going to find somebody new. You know, I like to think that if you set the human that is really sick in front of them and show person to person, human to human, what's going on, they would care then. But when it's just, oh, you know, we have X amount of headcount available in X department, cool, we'll find them. It's like everyone's replaceable.
Yeah.
So, yes, we can share that information, but my situation was a workplace abuse at the end, and the internal investigation, that was just for show. The actual truth didn't come out, even though I knew what the people being interviewed had said. They were like, yeah, we didn't find anything. Well, that's not true. And then I had a decision. To your point, when you're mentally broken down, and I was at the end, which is why I said I'm out, I didn't have the capacity or the energy to bring a lawsuit or prove or bring those people under oath that this is what they said. And this, I just didn't have it in me. And so I just took the hit. But, and now, almost 3 years later, I'm finally, for the first time in my life, I finally feel not just okay, but I feel good every day in my work. And I am on that front line making an impact. And so wealth and success become different criteria when you are focusing inward first, choosing yourself first, and then seeing what that looks like for the people, places, and things around you that you care about. You get to decide what that criteria is. And it's not just about the paycheck and the benefits. Granted, I know that's a big part of, again, US because it's tied to everything. But it's just considering and having the audacity to think about your well-being along with those things.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that happened to you
Oh,
because
thank you.
nobody should be put through something like that just because they're trying to build their career, pay their bills. And where's the humanity in that, you know? And
There's not.
noted that it took 3 years for you to really recover from that.
Yeah.
And that's not okay. That's not
The
okay.
norm is workplace abuse at this point because
Yes.
it's that power over. And with that said, I can still name great actual leaders, even in my old workplace. I know who they are. They're rare. It just depends on where you're at. And listen, the tide is shifting. I don't mean to be so bleak about the workplace, but the tide is shifting. Things wouldn't be getting so pinchy right now from the outdated masculine energy in the world if the tide weren't shifting. It is.
Yeah, this is where everyone's humanity comes into play. What will you accept? And if you are going to accept being dehumanized, being micromanaged, being burnt out, the cost to you and the people around you that you have that love you, like if you're willing to accept that for you, eventually, you're going to get to a point where they decide you're no good to us anymore. We have squeezed every ounce of energy and experience from you, and then they just discard you. And
So,
at the end of the day, you're left with nobody because
right.
you did not, rally together to advocate for each other as a team, to advocate for better work-life balance, to advocate for that work from home versus return to office. And at the end of the day, when everyone decides that fear is what's going to drive them, And I understand everyone's position is different. I get that. I am very privileged. Very, very privileged. I mean, I've worked a long time. I'm lucky that I have a partner who supports me. We're in a house where the mortgage is paid off. Granted, I get that. But I also experienced this early in my career, and I refuse to settle for less. I refuse to settle for disrespect, for putting work before family, for dignity. Sacrificing my dignity for a paycheck was not worth it. And the minute that that happened, I was out the door.
That's something I didn't get early on because my story is I grew up in a domestic violence home. So my nervous system from the moment I could remember, and probably even before that, was the familiar and the safe was actually feeling that instability, feeling less than, feeling like that hypervigilance that you never knew what was going to happen and you're always on guard. That was the first 20 years of my life. So for me, going into corporate, it was like going home again, meaning that atmosphere is what felt safe and familiar to me. So I didn't even know that my dignity or that my well-being or that the power over the structures, the oppression, that didn't enter into anything until I started to have my soul awakening when I was around 35. And I was like, wait, something doesn't feel good. I don't like that we're doing this, or I don't like we're doing that. And that's when I started the Women's Employee Resource Group. And that gave me the inroad to what I am meant to be, which is this healer and this warrior out in the world, serving women to turn back to themselves and to light back up, reignite that intuition that we've always had, but that has been conditioned out of us. And that's again, I'm not suggesting that that doesn't happen to men or humans in general, but I'm saying like specifically. As a woman, that's what happened to me. So I feel right now, again, in this time and place, more and more people are kind of awakening or stirring to what they do want. And it takes leaders like you and me out in the wild to walk side by side with them and help figure out what feels safe to you to do on this specific time frame. Because if you do too much all at once, that can create new trauma. So if you're feeling this vibe, this conversation that Lori and I are like, reach out to one of us. Let's have a conversation. Let's see what could be, because I was that person even 5 years ago that was like, I couldn't possibly. Well, I walk you to what you could, like what could be true today. So, Lori, what moves are you excited to be making right now? What's coming up for you?
Well, it's building this accelerator. I'm hoping to launch the first cohort in January. Initially, it was scheduled for September. I pushed that back a bit. I have beta testers going through the module content and just getting that out in the world and then seeing, how that impacts women in middle management that have struggled to break through to the next level of leadership, right? So, when you're looking at senior managers, directors, even VPs that are thinking, how do I get to that next level? They don't have the roadmap right now. And in order to get that roadmap, they either have to pay a ridiculous amount of money for one of these courses, and that's not feasible. And then you have corporate budgets that are tightening. So I made it so that it is very cost efficient for women to just self-invest. And what they come out of it with, it's really around a clarity with action items and templates and frameworks around what does it mean to be a strategic leader? Because women always get the runaround on that. And really having that clarity of this is what it means to be a strategic leader, this is how you show up, and then going through some exercises of, hey, this is the industry that I'm in, this is where I'm at with it, this is what I'm facing today, and then walking away with a custom action plan for them in their career to do that. And then I have five other modules, so strategic leadership is the first one because every woman knows what it's like to be told you're not strategic enough. But then they're never given clarity on what that actually means. And then navigating the power in politics, to have that savvy to understand how someone's playing you in the workplace. But then, how you respond in a way that makes you feel authentic to you without feeling like you're being manipulative or without feeling like, oh, politics are icky, I don't do that. these are the types of things that have kept women in their space and have prevented them from moving ahead. And the women that have unlocked that are the ones that have moved ahead. But like you said, we see a lot of the old style mentality in that space. And I want to encourage, and this whole power accelerator is around developing women leaders in a way that they still align with their values. They have the action items and frameworks that they can take, put to action day one to show up in their role in an elevated way that just establishes that they are there, they are the leader, they know what they're doing, they're ready for the next step, how they advocate for themselves in that way. And then talking about what's the opportunity that lies ahead. I mean, you hear a lot about companies just all in on AI. It's terrifying when you hear about everyone racing to be first without doing the due diligence that needs to be done. And time and again, I've talked to women leaders and women in the C-suite, who've helped inform the content for this, that say, we are terrified of how we are approaching this because there's no real strategy. It's just like throwing spaghetti at a wall and see what sticks. And just use the word AI or agentic agent or like AI, and people just think they sound smart. And it's like, no, these women are going to come out of this program and they're going to understand how to craft an AI strategy, how to govern it, how to ask the right questions to reduce risk in their companies for the implementation of this. Because right now it's the wild, wild west out there. It is scary and it's failing miserably. It's failing. That's the sweet spot right now where women can make their mark in how we responsibly implement it, how we ethically implement it, and how we govern it, and how they can be that thought leader. And so there's six modules in total touching on the various aspects of senior leadership that's important and that women are craving that knowledge around. And then there's a cohort that will meet weekly that they'll be part of with other women leaders in that similar position. So then building up that network. And then after that, they will go into an alumni network to continue learning from each other. And then I'm also offering one-to-one executive coaching for women in the cohort as part of this program. So for the 12 weeks, they're going to get 30 minutes of executive coaching from me related to what they need out of this program based on the module content that they've navigated, based on questions that they have, but really trying to unlock the leader that's within them that they know is there. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about it. It's one of those things that when that idea, like I said, was born out of rage, when that came to fruition and started having conversations to validate and do some research around, is this something that's needed? I just got more and more excited about it. And when I announced it to my network, I mean, my network lit up like, this is what you were meant to do. We're so happy to see you doing this. And the support that I've received from men and women abroad, even though this program is for women, has just been amazing and overwhelming and has let me know, has been a signal to me, you're on the right track. This is what you're meant to be doing, so.
And that's what's beautiful when you get those signals and depending on whatever you subscribe to, but there's those glimmers or those signs. Those aren't coincidence. Those are always around us all day, every day to tell us or to inform us if we're on the right track of our soul's mission or not. So when you bring up AI, I want to go to a post that you made actually a day ago about LinkedIn's new terms and service and the data use.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Let's unpack that. Because interestingly, I'm on LinkedIn. That's the main way for my business that I talk to new people and grow my network. It came up on my app as like, we're updating our terms and data use, but I couldn't click on it. There was nowhere for me to read what it was about. So I just had to exit out of it. And I was like, well, I don't know what that was about. So I didn't pay attention. And then I saw later in the day that people were like, hey, did everybody see this? And do you know what it means? And I was like, oh, cool. Somebody broke it down. And I was like, oh shit. So I immediately went to the controls and turned it off. So tell us what the change in service is. And by the way, did mine not work on purpose? Like, I don't know. Was this an intentional glitch or was this just like an Amy thing? So tell us about the LinkedIn update and what it means.
Yeah, I don't know. It must have been a glitch because I clicked learn more and I got into the settings immediately.
Okay.
But what it means is that LinkedIn will be using your posts and your comments on posts, your activity on LinkedIn to train their AI models. And it is an opt-out setting. So if you don't make a choice by November 3rd, you will be opted in and you have to explicitly opt out, which I absolutely disagree with. I think it should be you have to opt into something like that. It shouldn't just be we're going to put you in there unless you say no. When I did more digging on this, and I did expand on it in a further LinkedIn article after the fact, because I was doing some research, because something like this similar happened with Claude. Anthropic did the same thing, and it is coming up where they will opt you in to training their models on your prompts and on your interactions with Claude unless you opt out. And the bigger concern I have here is this is now going to be the trend going forward. Whereas before, you know, we could disregard the terms of service. Nobody really reads them. Nobody really reads the updates. Privacy settings were changed so that you had to then explicitly opt out of privacy for some social media platforms after some outrage about that. But now we're seeing this with AI. And I just caution users, don't blindly accept the changes to terms and conditions anymore. Take a moment, and if you can't read it, you know, if it's too much, and they do that intentionally, it's very wordy. This man that I follow called Kevin Turner on LinkedIn, he puts it into Perplexity, and he is like, tell me what the changes are. So I definitely encourage you follow this man, Kevin D. Turner. He gives the prompts in Perplexity of, you know, tell me what's changed or how I'm going to be impacted by what's written here. It's so important to practice that due diligence as more and more platforms start leveraging AI, and data's gold. So, you know, your data is what's being used to train that model. And that's disturbing. For me, it's like I pay for my LinkedIn premium. I'm already paying LinkedIn. They should not make this an opt-out setting. And even for people who use it for free, it's just the ethics behind it are questionable. And people need to know. And even more concerning about just them using your data, I think about other people that are posting on LinkedIn. And it's getting to be like very polarized, much like Facebook, much like any of the other social media platforms. And if that's what's being used to train further models on LinkedIn, I really am worried about what LinkedIn is going to become.
I mean,
And
all the social platforms, right?
yes.
I mean, at some point, I'm putting a lot of time and energy and effort into my own ecosystems. Not that those aren't housed by big tech in some ways, but it's just with social anymore. Getting back to your own ecosystem, that's really what my focus is. And because at some point, the platforms aren't going to be fruitful to like any real conversation.
See a migration of a number of people that I follow on LinkedIn moving to Substack, because there has been some recent talk too about, you know, some posts from women are being suppressed that normally have a lot of followers, so they're not seeing that engagement. And that's great. Substack is great. I mean, I'm starting to get onto it, and I'm following a number of people on it, and I've subscribed to a couple of big influencers that I really, really admire. But I'm also aware that they can change the terms of use at any time. And so now it's a matter of due diligence of terms of use are, you know, that are being updated for good reason. And companies are very intentional about the wording behind it. I know because I've been in calls where we've discussed that working in an organization and updating terms of use and the reason behind it. So now I'm more critical when I receive those updates. And seeing this trend of opt out is what the biggest concern is. I think a regulator, like regulation, is slow go moving. You know, we're not going to see regulation on this anytime soon. And so people have to practice due diligence.
Oh, so Lori, as we start to wind down, we've covered a lot in this hour. What would you say to the people in charge that may not realize that they're perpetuating harmful behaviors to their teams? They may not know it. How would you kind of stoke that fire a little bit? to help them turn inward and say, like, wait, am I doing that?
I mean, that is a great question, and there's no single answer because that can be painted with a broad brush. But I would say when there are concerns that are raised that impact people in a very human way, where they're raising concerns about policy changes, about the rollback in commitment to DEI, forcing people back to the office. Initially, people do voice concerns, and those aren't to be dismissed. And those can't be silenced into submission and complicity, right? Because people are still, they're still working, but they're planning their exit. And it won't be long before they move somewhere else, and you are going to lose the talent that you have invested in. And so take that time to really listen and reflect. And for those that want to be the change makers in their industry, the thought leaders, don't follow what the big tech companies are doing or the financial institutions are doing with, one company's layoff, all of a sudden everyone's laying off, and one company's return to office, they're all returned to office. Why don't you be the change maker that goes against the grain and stays progressive? Maintain that progressive leadership. You will not have a problem finding top talent that will want to work for you. Plain and simple.
Awesome. I really enjoy that there's absolutely feedback when things are rolled out, and a lot of people in charge just toe the company line and they're like, yeah, well, this comes from above and this and that. No, you could take some ownership in that, and you can figure out how to not perpetuate. That can be a defining moment for you in your career. Awesome. Lori, where do we find you and support your work?
So I'm on LinkedIn, so you can definitely find me there. Lori Lalonde is my handle on LinkedIn. And my company, Her Executive Ascent, herexecutiveascent.com. So if you want to learn more about the program, and then for any women out there that are thinking, hey, that sounds like that program might work for me, feel free to book a consultation with me. I have that available in my LinkedIn profile. If you want to chat for 30 minutes, no strings attached, just to chat about what your career looks like and is this program even a good fit? Because I won't let people apply directly or register directly. We have to meet because I need to know that this program is actually a good fit for you. And if it's not, if it's too early in your career, I'm going to let you know because the goal of this is to have women be able to experience immediate impact from this and be able to apply it immediately in their role. And if this is not relevant to the role that you're in, it's not the right fit for you. And maybe I can help you discover maybe what other programs other people are running that might work better. So really that's the goal. So I don't allow people to register directly.
Closing remarks as we wrap up.
It is tough right now on so many fronts. And the best thing that you can do is not just take care of yourself, but the people around you. Build your little support system, whether that's at work, at home, in your neighborhood. Like I have so many different support systems. I have neighbors that are just amazing. Like we check on each other, we ping each other to go for walks. When they're out of town, I'm collecting their packages from the door and keeping them here until they get back. And at work, I build that community. And then those friendships have extended long beyond, like long, long beyond my tenure at the workplace. There are still people I'm connected with that I worked with 15 years ago. And we're still really close. And even at home, having that connection with family and not just immediate family, but extended family, all of those different support systems for me have been a saving grace in those dark times. And I mean, pandemic was definitely one of them. And this feels like we're in definitely the upside down, but lean on your support system because at the end of the day, we're here for a very short amount of time on this earth. And it's really about what your legacy is. And is that to the people that you love, or is that to just surviving and just this existence of just trying to make the next buck. It's difficult, right? So I just it's, for me, it's always been about people. I've always thrived in community. I've always gravitated to community, and so that's what it is.
Thanks, Lori.
Yeah. Anytime. Thank you for having me.